Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Working from home? Conference calls?
You're still on mute, John.
With everything we have going on right now, it's never been more important to get the sleep we need. Quality sleep is a natural immune booster, and only the Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts your comfort and support on both sides, your Sleep Number setting. So, all those other things we're doing to stay healthy and happy, well, they'll work better too. And now, during the lowest prices of the season, the Queen Sleep Number 360 C4 smart bed is only $12.99. Save $400, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Valerie Sanderson, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 24th of June, these are our main stories. The funeral of Rayshard Brooks, a black man shot dead by US police, has taken place in Atlanta. The leading infectious disease expert in the United States has warned of a disturbing surge in the number of COVID-19 cases in parts of the country. Coronavirus restrictions are to be significantly eased in England, with pubs, restaurants and cinemas allowed to reopen from next month. Also in this podcast,
Lee Jung-shung hid thousands of photographic negatives under his floorboards before finally publishing them abroad.
The Chinese photographer whose images revealed to the world the horrors of Chairman Mao's Cultural Revolution has died. First to the United States, and mourners have paid their last respects at the funeral of Rayshard Brooks, a black man fatally shot by police in the city of Atlanta. The 27-year-old died weeks after George Floyd was killed in Minneapolis, an event that sparked widespread protests across the country. In his eulogy at the Ebenezer Baptist Church, the Reverend Raphael Warnock said America had grown too accustomed to black people dying.
Black parents do not really know what to tell their children in order to keep them alive, and that's a problem. That's not just a black problem, although it's happening to black people. That's an American problem.
The Reverend Dr. Bernice King, daughter of the late civil rights pioneer Dr. Martin Luther King, also addressed the congregation.
In honor of Ahmaud Arbery, in honor of Breonna Taylor, in honor of George Floyd, in honor of Rayshard Brooks and countless others, don't stop until it matters that dignity, justice, and equity are a reality for all black lives. Rayshard Brooks' death will not be in vain.
I asked our correspondent in the US, Nada Tofik, what else was said at the service.
Given the moment that the nation's in reckoning with the racial tensions in this country, we heard a lot about that, not just from Dr. Bernice King, who told protesters to not stop, to keep protesting until all Black Lives Matters, but even from the friends and family of Rayshard Brooks, who said that they hope his death isn't in vain and that this finally brings healing. You know, we got a little bit more of a personal look into his life. One of his friends who ran a construction company in Toledo, Ohio, where he worked, talked about how much he had to overcome on the restrictions placed on him while he was on probation after getting out of prison, and how that justice system, in which she called the systemic racism that exists, made it impossible for him to live a prosperous life. And the Reverend Raphael Warnock, who gave the eulogy, really urged everyone to not just march on the streets, but to march to the ballot box and vote on this issue, saying that this is a long issue that has to be dealt with, but it has to be dealt with in legislation as well.
And in the wider community across the US, what impact has Rayshard Brooks' death had, coming as it did less than 3 weeks after the death of George Floyd?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the incident in itself and the response to the incident had a profound impact. I mean, first, here you had, while the nation was protesting, another incident where a black man who was sleeping in his car after an encounter with police, was then shot at his, he was running away twice. And then after that, the attorney who was pressing charges on these two officers, one with murder, pointed out how he was kicked once he was already shot on the ground, really sparking outrage at people at how Mr. Brooks was treated. On the other hand, what I can say is that the police chief resigned the day after the shooting, and the assistant chief, Rodney Bryant, who is black, is now serving as the city's interim police chief, and those charges were brought quickly. So people are saying at least they're seeing more accountability for these types of incidents.
Nada Tofik. And staying in the U.S., Dr. Anthony Fauci, a leading member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, has warned of a surge of infections in several states, including Texas, Florida, and Arizona. He was giving evidence to a House of Representatives committee.
You are now seeing a disturbing surge of infections that looks like it's a combination, but one of the things is an increase in community spread. And that's something that I'm really quite concerned about, that.
Dr. Fauci said some areas, like New York, had handled the virus well, but he warned that other parts of America were now seeing it spread. I spoke to our correspondent, Barbara Plett-Usher, who's in Washington, and asked her what more we'd learned from Dr. Fauci.
Well, in terms of this disturbing surge that he was talking about, and he mentioned Texas, Florida, and Arizona in particular, but also other states, he said the next weeks would be critical for getting it under control. He mentioned one reason was community transmission, which seems to counter the assertion by President Trump that the increase in numbers is because of an increase in testing. And as you heard earlier, Mr. Trump had said that he directed the administration to slow down testing for that reason. But Dr. Fauci and the other three public health officials who testified with him said they had received no such instructions. And Dr. Fauci also said he was cautiously optimistic that a vaccine would be available for Americans by the end of the year or by the beginning of the next one.
Well, you mentioned testing. Where is the U.S. with it and other measures to combat the virus?
All four of the public health officials described real progress in testing. More than 25 million people, or 8% of the population, has been tested, and the numbers increase all the time. These officials said they would be doing more, not less. They would be expanding the ways that people are tested, not just to identify cases, but also for surveillance to understand how the outbreak spreads in the community, and that they would have a version that would be available in a doctor's office by late fall. But this business about surveilling how the outbreak spreads is the weak spot, I think, because a lot of communities don't have enough health workers who've been trained to do that. It's called contact tracing. So that is one area where they're going to have to increase the personnel if they actually want to make a difference.
Barbara, you're living there. I mean, how seriously do you think Americans are taking the possibility of contracting the virus? I mean, I'm thinking of President Trump's rally in Oklahoma on Saturday, notable for the empty seats, but also for the scarcity of people wearing masks.
You know, Valerie, it's a really mixed picture. Here in Washington, a lot of people wear masks. The reopening of businesses has been slow and phased. But in Texas, where I was recently, that wasn't the case, really. The reopening happened much more quickly, and I saw far fewer people wearing masks. So it depends where you are. In Phoenix, Arizona, for example, the city has just made wearing masks mandatory because they've seen this increase of cases. The president simply is not modeling the kind of behavior that his public health officials are asking for.
Barbara Plett-Usher. For months, Brazil's president Jair Bolsonaro has very publicly belittled the severity of the coronavirus pandemic. When the outbreak began, he dismissed it as a little cold. Since then, the country's recorded more than 1 million confirmed cases and more than 51,000 deaths. Despite that, President Bolsonaro has continued to appear in public without a mask. But now a judge has ruled he must change his ways. Our reporter in Sao Paulo, Camila Mota, told us more.
He basically ruled that the president has to comply with the local legislation. The use of protective masks has been made compulsory in the country's capital, Brasilia, in April. And the president is quite often seen wandering around in Brasilia without a mask, including when he goes to rallies against social distancing measures organized by his supporters. So in his decision, this federal judge highlighted the president must take all necessary measures to avoid the transmission of COVID-19, and that to go out at this point without any PPE on is at best disrespectful.
Camila, what if he ignores the judge and still goes out not wearing a mask?
Bolsonaro has to pay a fine of around $400 every single day he goes out without a mask.
So quite a lot of money. I mean, what's the reaction been to this ruling about the president?
Well, many Brazilians are saying it was about time, actually. The fact that Bolsonaro has been downplaying the pandemic for 3 months now has frustrated a lot of people. He keeps saying that he's more afraid of the economic fallout than of the disease itself. So he's against the social distancing measures implemented by local authorities. Just a few days ago, when the death toll from COVID-19 in Brazil reached 50,000, he said he thought all the measures taken to fight the pandemic here were an exaggeration.
And how bad is the spread of the virus now in Brazil?
I was talking to this epidemiologist who said Brazil has 26 states and 26 different outbreaks. And that's because May, for example, was a really grim month for some states where the healthcare system really did collapse and people died at home. They died at these basic health units. In June now, we're seeing that the infection is spreading fast in other states and that the disease is now moving from big cities to medium and small-sized cities.
Camila Mota. As we heard in the earlier podcast, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has announced the most significant easing of coronavirus restrictions in England since imposing a lockdown in March. From July the 4th, the 2-metre social distancing rule will be reduced to 1 metre. Pubs, restaurants, hairdressers, cinemas and museums will be allowed to reopen, provided they follow safety guidelines. Mr Johnson said the national hibernation was coming to an end. Here's our assistant political editor, Norman Smith.
In one bold swoop, Boris Johnson has, if not lifted the lockdown, at least ended it across vast swathes of the economy and society. A far more dramatic easing of restrictions than many at Westminster and in business had dared to hope. As expected, bars, restaurants and cafes will be able to open, including indoors, as will museums, cinemas, galleries and bingo halls. There's a big boost for the domestic holiday market, with hotels, B&Bs, campsites, caravan parks, fun fairs and theme parks all getting the go-ahead. Churches will be able to resume services, but with no singing, and wedding ceremonies can proceed, but with guests capped at 30. Separately, households of 6 will be able to visit and stay with another household, provided they observe social distancing. In the Commons, there was widespread support for this significant step change, including from the Labour leader Sir Keir Starmer, and the Prime Minister struck a deliberately hopeful note.
Today, we can say that our long national hibernation is beginning to come to an end, and life is returning to our streets and to our shops. The bustle is starting to come back, and a new but cautious optimism is palpable.
At the same time, the 2-metre rule, which has been at the heart of the government's COVID strategy and which many feared threatened to throttle the economy, is to be replaced with 1-metre plus. The plus, a reference to the additional precautions required when standing 1 metre apart, such as wearing a face mask or meeting outdoors. Mr Johnson said he was placing his trust in the common sense of the British public to stick to these new guidelines. But he also issued this warning.
As we have seen in other countries, there will be flare-ups for which local measures will be needed. And we will not hesitate to apply the brakes and reintroduce restrictions, even at national level, if required.
Should Mr Johnson have miscalculated and his lifting of the restrictions prove premature, then the political consequences are likely to be profound, potentially dwarfing the previous COVID storms over care homes and testing.
Norman Smith at Westminster. So, what do the experts say about reducing the 2-metre rule? I asked our global health correspondent, Naomi Grimley.
Experts do not agree on this. One of the papers submitted to government ministers advising them on the science suggested that the risk in cutting the distance could mean that the risk is increased by between 2 times and 10 times, which is obviously a lot. But on other, if you look at other scientific research, it suggests that it might be oversimplification that 2 metres should be enforced at all times. That's certainly the advice of the University of Oxford and MIT in a study recently. They say it actually depends on all kinds of things, whether you're indoors, outdoors, whether the area is ventilated or not. And the University of Dundee says that in 78% of cases of infections happen below 1 metre. So that is really why the government in the end is having to balance that with economic considerations.
Will people have to take other precautions if they're staying just 1 metre away? Will they have to wear masks, for example?
In his statement, Boris Johnson did say that more mask wearing would be part of this sort of holistic approach. Also things like making sure that in some cases people, for example, passengers on trains aren't face to face. They might be instead sat facing the same direction. Those kind of other mitigation measures, as they're called, could help cut the risk. I should just add that one of the former chief scientific advisers in the UK has spoken out and said that he thinks this is a mistake, he thinks it's risky, that it gives the cue to the general public that we're back to normal.
So these new rules, these are about England. What about other countries around the world? What are they doing about distancing?
Well, lots of people point to a country such as Denmark, which did have a 2 metre rule and it then cut it to 1 metre. But we haven't seen a spike in infections there yet. However, the US, on the other hand, is sticking with its 2 metre rule. And Scotland is also saying for the moment that it wants to stick with 2 metres.
Neighbour Grimley. The tennis star Novak Djokovic has gone into quarantine for 2 weeks at his home in Belgrade after testing positive for the coronavirus. The world number one joins 3 other players and 2 trainers who were infected during an exhibition tournament Djokovic has been criticised for organising in Serbia and Croatia. The Adria Tour saw matches played in front of thousands of spectators with little evidence of social distancing. Djokovic said he wasn't showing any symptoms but admitted it had been wrong to hold the tournament and he was extremely sorry for each infection. His wife has also tested positive. Nuala McGovern spoke to Marko Hrasta, who was at the weekend's tournament in Zadar in Croatia and who was commentating on the matches for Sport Club TV Slovenia. She asked him if he's self-isolating.
I didn't have any choice on this because when I was discussing with my wife that I'm coming home from Zadar, which is in Croatia, she told me that I have to immediately go to the countryside to isolate myself because she's at risk to have coronavirus if I come home. And she has diabetes and we have a 10-month-old child. So actually, I didn't have much of a choice.
I understand, and it makes total sense. But what about the reaction in the area to Djokovic now testing positive for COVID-19?
Well, you want to hear the reaction of Slovenian media or Serbian media or area?
I want to hear it all.
Well, of course, we're a little bit biased because, you know, our region is more Djokovic. We are not all fans of Djokovic. Of course not. We have, especially in Slovenia, a lot of Federer and Nadal fans. But we all think that this was a little bit reckless. It's very unfortunate. And we all know that Novak probably thought all the best. But this was a very reckless idea. I mean, not the idea of Adria Tour. I think that all things became too loose. Things started to ease up a little bit in Croatia and Slovenia because we didn't have so many coronavirus cases. I think that Adria Tour, organizing of Adria Tour was a good idea, but the things went out of control. In Zadar, for example, we didn't wear masks. Only people in restaurants and bars wore masks. Everybody should put mask on. And I was a little bit afraid when I've heard that Dimitrov has coronavirus and Dona Vekic, for example, was sitting next to him in exhibition match. And on Sunday, I took some autographs of Dona Vekic. But today, fortunately, I read somewhere that Dona Vekic is coronavirus negative. So I'm a little bit more relaxed now.
Will you get tested?
I will get tested tomorrow at 7 a.m. Greenwich time. So I get results in probably 10 hours or so. I wanted to test immediately on Monday when I came back. But the thing is, my doctor told me that due to incubation period, I have to wait at least a couple of days. That's why I'm testing tomorrow.
Marco Rasta, commentator for Sport Club TV Slovenia. Still to come.
The fight against the mafia is not a Sicilian fight. It's a European and worldwide fight.
Police in Sicily have arrested dozens of people connected to one of the most powerful and violent branches of the mafia. As many countries come out of lockdown, what have we learned from experiencing a pandemic? And how will this knowledge affect future politics and society, even our own lives? Well, in a series called Rethink, the BBC has asked a group of high-profile leaders and thinkers and some memorable former guests to tell us not what they predict will happen, but what they want to happen. Outside Source first spoke to Giacomo Leone in Italy after he lost his father, a doctor, to COVID-19 back in March. 3 months on, the programme heard his difficulty about coming to terms with the sudden death.
Worse than this crisis is only the drama of wasting it, of closing in on ourselves. These words are from Pope Francis, and I found them perfect in this moment. I lost my father, a doctor, to COVID-19 3 months ago. He used to say, nothing is lost with peace, everything is lost with war. Words from another Pope, Pius XII. I would like the world to be different. I would like to see more love between people, because this virus has shown the world that health and diseases have no colors, no flags, no countries. I would like people to understand that money is useless if you are not healthy enough to spend it. I would like them to understand how important time is and not to waste it, because the world can turn upside down in a moment. And sometimes you lose the time to say what you want to the people that you love. I would like people to help each other to find solutions and solve problems. Problems like how to build more and better hospitals all around the world. I would like politicians and people in power to be united when facing emergencies like this. I would like people to be more spiritual. We should all learn more about our existence, who we are, where we come from, and what happens after death. Because that way, when you lose somebody you love, you know that they are gone, but not disappear. I would like people to know different cultures and different traditions, but at the same time, to understand that love is universal and hate has no place in the world. And I would like the world to know my father, to know what a great man and a great doctor he was, and what a great soul he is. He just moved to a better place when there is no pain, maybe to help us from up there.
Giacomo Leone in Italy, who lost his father to COVID-19. Among the many things still unknown about the coronavirus is how long it will take for those who become seriously ill to recover fully. Now experts in the UK say they fear a significant proportion will be left with permanent lung damage. Our health correspondent Sophie Hutchinson has been finding out more.
Lung scarring is a major concern. Permanent damage to the air sacs, which can leave people with lifelong breathlessness. Tony McHugh, who's a retired taxi driver, gets breathless even after a short walk. He was on a ventilator for 2 weeks with COVID-19 and 3 months on is still struggling.
Even like having a shower still exerts you a bit, you know. So I have to sit down when I come out of the shower just for a little bit. See, the silly thing, like now if I'm just walking the flowers at night or something, and you bend down and you're picking something up and...
Other coronaviruses, SARS and MERS, have left 20 to 60% of survivors with lung damage. Most COVID-19 patients with breathlessness are expected to recover. But early indications from the Royal College of Radiologists suggests up to 30% of patients who've been severely ill are showing signs of lung damage. Professor Gisli Jenkins from the National Institute for Health Research says the potential scale of the problem is daunting.
Never before in our lifetime have so many people been subject to the same lung injury at the same time. So even if it's only a very small proportion of people who do get scarring of the lung, that's still going to be a large number of people overall.
New guidance from the British Thoracic Society says it's vital that what's estimated to be tens of thousands of patients who've had COVID-19 pneumonia are checked for possible scarring in the weeks and months during their recovery.
Sophie Hutchinson. Police in Sicily have arrested dozens of people connected to one of the most powerful and violent branches of the mafia. Dawn raids were conducted on Tuesday and searches of properties have been continuing. The mayor of Palermo, Leoluca Orlando, gave us more details of the operation.
46 persons were arrested, 46 persons in connection with the drug traffic with the other cities and our countries, in connection with the Naples, in connection with Colombia, in connection with the other country where the drug traffic is present and the risk to be infiltrated. I think that what happens today is a message to everybody living in UK or living in Germany or living in north or the south of Italy, that the fight against the mafia is not a Sicilian fight, it's an European and worldwide fight. Just so worldwide, as a worldwide is the mafia. What the police is doing, what the justice system is doing, that is just in connection with the cultural change of the people. The people in Italy want, the people in Sicily want, the people in Catania in this case want to live free from the government of the mafia, for the territorial control of the mafia, and we need, of course, the two wheels of the cart. One wheel is the wheel of law enforcement, and we need the other wheel, the wheel of the cultural change. And I can tell you that there is no city in Europe so culturally changed like Palermo in the last 40 years. 40 years ago, the mafia had the face of the institutions. Now the mafia is criminality, and people understood that it is better to live without the mafia than together with the mafia.
The mayor of Palermo, Leoluca Orlando. A Chinese photographer who documented the horror and violence of China's decade-long cultural revolution, launched under Chairman Mao in 1966, has died in the United States. Li Zhengsheng was 79. Michael Brister reports.
Li Zhengsheng hid thousands of photographic negatives under his floorboards before finally publishing them abroad. They were politically unacceptable in China. They show mass rallies, officials being humiliated and people being killed. The Cultural Revolution was a 10-year political campaign initiated by Chairman Mao in 1966. It's rarely talked about publicly in China today. A Chinese version of Mr. Li's shocking book of photographs was published only 2 years ago, and then only in Hong Kong. In his final message to friends, Mr. Li, who died of a brain hemorrhage, said he'd strive to bear witness to history.
Michael Bristow. The South Asian marriage website Shadi.com has removed a skin tone filter following pressure from some of its users. Managers of the website said they'd been unaware of the search option and that it should have been removed earlier. Unlike most online dating, the website aims to help people find a spouse, replacing the South Asian tradition of matchmakers. Callum Leslie reports.
This one all really started with Megan, who's from Toronto in Canada.
I had noticed the filter with all the talk about Black Lives Matter.
She got in touch with Shadi.
One representative had said this is a filter required by most parents on the website.
Then Hetal, who lives in Texas in America, saw what had happened.
I was pretty shocked because the company usually has a social responsibility.
So she set up a petition to get rid of it.
Within 14 hours, We were about 1,500 signatures.
I think once it kind of took off, that's when they had actually said that this was a legacy feature from long ago. I guess overnight, the feature was removed.
In other words, Shadi.com were saying it was an old filter they'd missed.
First things first, we completely agree.
Adhish Zaveri's from Shadi.com. He says the filter was only in the website, which is about 20 years old, and not on the newer app, where most of its users are. Although about 3 million still use the older site.
As we evolved as an organisation, we realised the responsibility and the role we play to society and towards our members and our community in particular.
It's the same ideas I've heard amongst older people in the South Asian community saying, oh, she is so fair.
I have my bachelor's, I have my master's, but if a skin tone can take that away from me, I would be the worst.
Well said. Callum Leslie reporting there. And that's it from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast, perhaps you have your own ideas about how life should be after lockdown, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Valerie Sanderson. Until next time, bye-bye.
Finding the right foundation is harder than ever. Il Makiage makes it easy to find your perfect match online. No store required. With 50 shades of flawless coverage and over 60,000 five-star reviews, the hype is real. Their online quiz uses AI to find your ideal shade in seconds. And with Try Before You Buy, you can try your full-size shade at home free for 14 days. Take the quiz at ilmakiage.com/quiz. ilmakiage.com/quiz.